Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, KR, routes 11 and 15 at Hummel's Wharf. It is great to have you on board with us today. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Charlie Slows with the call as once again Bryce Harper goes deep.
The 2-1 pitch. Swinging a long drive. Right center field. Way back. Stem to the wall. He leaps and it's gone. Bryce Harper has another grand slam. A line shot over the 392 mark to right center field. He puts four on the board with one swing.
He is red hot right now. Bryce Harper with another home run, and Charlie Slows with a call on the Nationals Radio Network. Impressive. All right. Eagles made their big trade today. They get the second overall pick of the draft. They will pick a quarterback. They made that very plain today. But they gave up the 8th, 77th, and 100th picks to do it, and a first-round pick next year and a second-round pick the year after. Yeah, we're only 8 days away from the first round of the draft when this entire mystery gets cleared up. It's exciting. We're going to pay money to a guy that we don't know if he can do it or not. All right. Here we go. Let's bring in Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. Greg, we're going to start a little differently here, and then we'll get to some recruiting in a moment. Sports Business Journal, John Orrand, who does a great job of covering the business side of sports, reporting that the Big Ten is just about set on one half of its rights, and it's $250 million a year with Fox Sports and Fox Sports One. What were your thoughts when you heard about that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that first came to mind was what exactly, you know, is the working of that deal? Because, of course, Fox has a stake in the Big Ten Network as well. So I'd be curious to know how that would change things. But ultimately, you know, the more money that the Big Ten brings in, the better in its mind and the better for its schools, of course, to get a share of it. Obviously, moving Rutgers and Maryland into the conference was a big part of hoping to boost a television deal that they were able to get during this round of bidding. So I think it's interesting, too, that they, you know, decided or either decided ahead of time or once they got to market, they figured that they would sell half of their package and then come back and sell another half. And you would think that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the market is for that second half because it's hard to see CBS coming after it with the SEC deal they have. It's hard to see NBC coming after it with the Notre Dame deal that they have. So it sort of leaves you with ESPN and ABC, who have, of course, aired numerous Penn State games over the years, to come to the table with an offer. And I'm sort of curious to see if there's any way the Big Ten still has leverage left for that package. So it'll certainly be something to watch over the coming days here. Obviously, the deal won't go into effect until the fall of 2017. So it won't change Penn State's TV listings too much this fall. But definitely down the road, you know, it'll be curious to see if the Big Ten ends up getting what analysts and what it thought it was going to get for this TV contract as they well, put around the country with different conferences.
Yeah, I think everybody was taken aback by how big the number was for half the package, $250 million per year. That's big money. And that's $17.83 million per school if you were able to divide it out. And the Big Ten Network's already in the neighborhood of about $7 million per school. So now, just by doing those two things, you're up near the $24, $25 million mark and haven't sold the other half yet. CBS was in it for a Sunday game of the week and for the Big Ten semifinals and Big Ten championship game. I know they still want to keep that. So that it wouldn't be football. I think it would be actually the basketball part that they would still be involved in. That's what I think they're trying to negotiate. Here's the other part. It also would run out before everybody else. It's only a 6-year deal. It's not 12. So they actually can go back to the table in 6 years before other people go back.
Yeah, you know, Dennis Dodd wrote about that for CBS Sports last night, and I thought that was a pretty interesting point as well. You know, what it comes down to is that all these conferences are sort of jockeying for position, and all of them want to be the ones that come open at the right time. And I think that, you know, we'll probably see a trend here now where conferences do shorter deals so that they don't miss out if their conference suddenly, you know, rises to the top in football and basketball, the two things that, excuse me, these networks are bidding on the most. So, yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. You know, we'll see. I'm sure there'll be more analyst talk over the next couple of days as to how exactly that number and that package sort of fits into the grand scheme of what the Big Ten was looking for. But, yeah, you're right, Steve, that, you know, if the Big Ten is able to negotiate a deal, which it looks like it has on both ends, the first half and, you know, presumably the second half when that gets signed, to make sure that they come open, you know, before everybody else does. Because really what it comes down to, and you know as well as I do, is everybody wants as big a market share as possible, because what you said, the more money they get, the more their schools get. And there's a recruiting advantage to it as well, especially for basketball. You know, football kids don't necessarily need to, you know, the ESPN, the CBS, kids know how to find that. But, you know, some of these basketball games can get relegated to channels that they can't really be found, and that ends up being a recruiting disadvantage in some sense. You know, I don't think people really understand how, at least in my mind, important the number of games Penn State basketball gets on BTN is to the recruiting pitch, because it's easy to find. If you want to see what Penn State basketball looks like, if you're a high school kid or a parent, you can find almost every single game on TV. So, save for that one you guys were at, where was that? Early in the season, I remember listening to it because it wasn't on TV, that conference tournament, but, or the preseason tournament, I believe it was.
It was Las Vegas.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously outside of that, but it's certainly a situation where coaches watch these things closely, not terribly close, I'm sure, but certainly there's recruiting advantages involved in these TV deals as well.
You mentioned recruiting, so let's get to that part of it on the football side of it. What kind of weekend was it for Penn State with the blue-white game?
It was a good one. It's tough, Steve, because there's so many schools that had spring games. Notre Dame, a handful of SEC schools, Temple had theirs, Pittsburgh. So it's difficult when you're trying to compete with that many schools, and kids sit down with their parents or extended family, coaches, whoever drives them to these things, and they say, okay, you know, maybe we have a free weekend, we can go farther than we normally would, and that probably helped Penn State in some cases and hurt it in other cases. So I thought it was a good weekend. They obviously pick up two commitments, C.J. Thorpe. They don't get shut out at Pittsburgh Central Catholic. They land him, the four-star guard. Rob Martin, the three-star tackle out of New Jersey, is a kid that they got in on early and ended up able to land. So I thought it was a good weekend. You know, kids come out of these things, we've talked about this before, nobody ever says a bad word, and if there's bad words to be said, kids keep quiet about it. But the reaction was good. Anytime kids can get to campus and sit down with the likes of Joe Moorhead, Matt Limegrover, Tim Banks, the new coaches on the staff, and learn what they are about, the better. And Penn State was able to do that in a lot of cases over the weekend.
There's also the NCAA. They're trying to be far more progressive when it comes to the student-athlete. The fact that they can now bring parents and or guardians with them on recruiting trips, and it's paid for. Can you discuss that and what that now means, and how some of the recruits have reacted to that?
Yeah, it's really hard to understate how important that ruling is. And it was one of the things the NCAA got right in its recent round of approved legislations. You know, the problem before was that, you know, when prospects came to campus, the NCAA, and it sort of has been evolving over the last couple of years with schools being able to pay for some meals that they weren't able to before and whatnot, but it was a very limited scope. You could pay for the prospect to get there, you could pay for him to do things on campus and whatnot, but other than that, you really couldn't extend it to the family with hotels and transportation and all that. So I thought that was important. It's sort of mind-boggling to think that that rule wasn't already in place. I mean, obviously we're in 2016 now, and things have reached a point in recruiting where it starts so early that kids and parents do have time to get to schools. But again, the further trips, they're not always doable, either from a time or financial perspective. But now the NCAA has wisely allowed parents to be a part of that per diem program that the NCAA has. So I like it. I think it's important. Kids obviously love it, you know, the opportunity for their parents to come with them and help them make a decision and maybe see things that they don't see or ask questions they don't think to ask is really important. So, and a school like Penn State, you know, again, we heard James Franklin talk talked about it a couple of times this spring. It's obviously isolated. You know, it's hard to get in and out of, and that certainly is true from a time perspective and a money perspective. So for parents to be able to come in with their kids or recruits on Penn State dime is obviously going to help Penn State down the road than maybe it would some other schools that are a little bit cheaper to get to.
Now, the texting part of it, more liberal rule when it comes to texting. What's been the reaction about that? Because now it's a little more freewheeling in terms of the when you can.
Yeah, I really don't like it. Urban Meyer has spoken out against it. James Franklin has spoken out against it. Yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, what good can possibly come of allowing someone to sit in an office somewhere, whether it's actually a coach, whether it's a graduate assistant on a coach's phone or so on and so on, and blow kids up over and over and over again. I understand that the NCAA is probably looking at that as well. It's hard to regulate, so we might as well just take it off our plate and deregulate it and not worry about it, which is sort of, you know, it sort of goes back to the same idea with fans tweeting at recruits. And, you know, it's an NCAA violation to do it, but how in the world could you ever police it? There was sort of the same principle with the text messaging. But, you know, the thing with the Twitter stuff is there's ways to block, you know, people from tweeting at you. There's a way to limit the number of coaches that can DM you and so on and so forth. There's, of course, no way to do that with text messaging, really. I mean, you can call block people and whatnot, but it's certainly much harder and not quite as feasible. So, yeah, I don't like that. I hope they revisit that. I hope they revisit the part of the satellite camp rule that disallows smaller schools from going to bigger schools. That was a unintended consequence of that whole ruling, and hopefully they can find a better way to sort of not have the authority of policing these things while also doing things that make sense for schools and coaches and players.
Greg, thanks so much. Appreciate the time and the perspective very much.
Always a pleasure, Steve. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I always have a standard practice here. If no offense, but if Soup Eternal calls you, you do pick up.
Absolutely.
Okay. That is who I was talking to there. So my apologies. I'm sorry. You know, I even said to her, she says, I know you got to go back on. I said, I know. the Special Olympics, we just did two events over the weekend with them. And then she wants me to do the closing ceremonies for them on June 4th. So
awesome.
That.
That's right. Every year at Penn State. Yep.
Yeah.
She have a final total from the big event?
Yeah, she just told me that right now, she said they're over 420,000, but they're still counting. That's pretty good.
That's a nice predicament to be in.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, they've had to do so many things. You know, let's face it, funding over the years has changed. So you've had to come up with clever, innovative ways to do things. Well, this is one of them. They've done a great job with it, to their credit. And the run to the 50, she came up. This was the seventh annual that they've done. And I was standing up on stage. And by the way, I'll tell you somebody else who's tireless with this is Franco Harris. Franco Harris is absolutely tireless with this. I mean, I'm talking, he goes all out to do this. And and when I was standing up on stage, and we had a bunch of us up on stage. I mean, it was Letterman were up there, current players were up there, Sue was up there, Matt Aaron, Greg Stewart from SOPA, Franco, James Franklin was up there. And the back area where the beef was started, the stage started to like creep down a little bit. But when I looked out, Sean, it was stunning when I looked out. First of all, I mean, you're blessed with a beautiful day. It was unbelievable. But the crowd out there, and they had it set up 5 to 6 minute milers, you know, 7 to 8, whatever. So I got up and I looked at Franco. I said, gee, Franco, I don't think we'll be able to do this. I said, they don't have the sub-4 minute sign up there. Where's the sub-4 minute mile sign? Where's our deal?
No, I know a lot of people realize that Special Olympics has been a charity that's been near and dear to the Paterno family for a very long time.
Well, I mean, you know, Sue and her family have thrown their heart and soul into this. And this is, I'm trying to think how many years Penn State has hosted the summer games. I'm going to say it's 28 years. I was the honorary chair of it in 2001. And it's amazing. When you look out and you do something like this, and you go to the events, I'll tell you what's really great about it, is when you go to the events, Sean, and you see just the maximum effort and the amount of love that's out there. It's really, really special. And, you know, they show through effort, through desire, through guts. And there's plenty of skill out there, too, take my word. But it really is something that, you know, and not only that, but I'll tell you what else I really appreciate. I really appreciate the parents. It is not easy to go through all the adjustments in life that you have to make when you have a child with special needs. And the amount of care, the amount of love, the amount of caring that you have to have as a parent, the amount of patience, and the amount of support. They're very special, the parents are, and the siblings are, of the Special Olympians. Now, look, they get so much back in return. It's unreal. But as much as we talk about the Special Olympians and about the coaches and the volunteers, we don't talk enough about the parents. You know, all those parents I see there. You know, all the places that they take the athletes to, staying overnight, the support that they give them. Yeah, really, it's very touching to me to see that. Because any parent, any caretaker, and then there's so many of the Special Olympians around here that I'll run into. Greg Foe, for example. He's done everything. He's played softball. He's played basketball. He's a really good basketball player. He's golf. You know, I see him now. He's working over at Walmart. Great. Matt Prozek, see him around. Same thing, working around the area. There are a lot of people that take the time, that make sure that they find employment that helps out so much and is so meaningful. So it's just a great community effort across the board, and for the Summer Games and for Special Olympics to go out, get a fundraiser that raises between over $420,000. Pretty special what they've been able to do. And yes, the Paterno family's been a guiding force behind it. So I apologize, Sean, for the little break. Like I said, when she calls, I usually do answer. And I think the audience understands that.
It was only about 10 seconds. No big deal. I was only going to plug the podcast, and no problem.
Yeah.
Coming up next half hour, the Eagles get the second pick. And the Big Ten on Fox. Great to have you with us today.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. They've been with us since day one. and we are proud to be with them. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. You had a nominee. Come on, Sean.
I did.
So let her rip. It's yours.
Okay. Robert Kimdichie of Ole Miss.
Yeah.
He's got problems.
He's got problems.
Well, he's got something on his mind that he wants to buy after he becomes an official member of the National Football League following the NFL draft next week. For some god unknown reason, he wants a panther as a pet. A panther. He claims owning a pet panther is not insane. they're like cats. If someone happens to come over and is scared, no problem. I'll put the panther away. Can you put the panther in its cage, please? I'm scared of panthers.
This is like all those people in the 60s and the 70s that used to go down to Florida, and they'd buy baby alligators. Oh, look how cute. You know, they get in a little thing, and all of a sudden, baby alligators, guess what they become? Bigger alligators. So people, this is in New York, start flushing them down the toilets because they get rid of them.
No, he can't be like Antonio Brown and maybe, buy his own custom-made Rolls Royce. No, it's got to be a panther.
Well, that's why the sewer guys literally would run down to full-grown alligators in the sewer system in New York in the 60s and 70s. These people bought them, like, hey, I'll go. All of a sudden, they went from adorable to alligators, so they flushed them. what are you doing here? I mean, he couldn't have gone out and maybe bought a dog. How about a dog? A dog's good.
Or rescue a cat or something. Not a cat, like a cat, not a panther. Not like a cat, like a panther, but like a kitty cat.
Like something, for example, that would need a litter box.
Right.
How about that? Something that size. A panther.
Not panther cat. Meow, meow cat.
He has a couple of issues, off-the-field issues, that are real. They're going to be troubling for teams because he has first-round talent and last-round off-the-field attitude. This panther is another step in that direction.
I just hope Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin have taken him off the draft board since this news popped up.
He is not a Steeler. There's no way. There's no way the Steelers are drafting him. Just can't picture that at all.
Well, they do need some D-line help, but maybe that'll be second or third round pick.
Find out. Find out if they go corner or if they go D-line. They may go D-line. One thing you can't do in the draft in the first round, one thing that I think is very important in the first round is that you can't reach. I think most times when you do reach in the first round, you get stung. I think in the first round, you've got to go with more of what you perceive to be as a sure thing. And I'll give you an example. And this is not 2020 hindsight. This is not 2020 hindsight. Because I felt this way going into the draft, and I said it at the time. If I'm the Cleveland Browns 2 years ago, I picked Teddy Bridgewater and not Johnny Manziel. To me, Manziel's a reach. Bridgewater was more of a cable-ready, let's play in the NFL guy now. I mean, that to me is what I'm looking for in the first round. If I want to gamble and take a reach on somebody, I'm starting to do that in round five. Right around round five, all right, can we find a little bit of steal, a little bit of value here in round five? And the first four rounds, I'm trying to fill needs wherever I can. So if I'm the Steelers, within the first four rounds, I've got to get myself a corner. I've got to get myself a defensive tackle. I've got to think to myself about what I want to do maybe with another linebacker. Do I want to pick another safety or do I want to pick another offensive lineman? Do I want to pick a tight end? I think the teams that get in trouble are the ones that reach a bit, where I've got to get a certain position and I'm going to get burned by it. And I think you see more mistakes made by teams that are really locked in where, okay, I've got, let's just pick a position, wide receiver. I got to get a wide out. All right. The first three guys on my board are all gone. The fourth guy on my board is probably a second-round pick. And there's an offensive tackle sitting there that I could also use that really is, like, ready to go. I got to pick the offensive tackle even though I need the corner because I'm gonna gamble, move back, and in the second round. If I think that's a second-round talent, I got to go that way. I think reaching is one of the worst things you can do in the draft. Now, going for the guy that's supposed to be there and ready to go, that's not going to be perfect either because obviously there's going to be guys that can make this jump with some ease, but for the most part, it is a chasm to go from college to the NFL. It's a chasm. Just like the move from high school to college is a big jump. That's over a canyon. Well, this is a chasm you got to jump to get to the NFL. And I think you have to go with more known entities. And you know, and I think the character thing comes into play. I think if you've got some off-the-field problems, what, do you think you're such an awesome and incredible off-the-chart organization that just by being with us, we'll solve everything? No, you won't. You'd be amazed at the level of consistency of off-the-field problems from high school to college to the pros. There's an amazing level of consistency. Oh, don't worry, they'll grow up. That's why I talk about the NBA draft all the time. The biggest problem with the NBA draft is all these guys that are 19 years old. Think about this, Sean, when it comes to the NBA draft. Think about all the guys in college that transfer. When they're 20, 19, 21. I mean, these guys are older than the guys going into the draft, and they've got indecision.
I was floored by the number that you kicked out. Was it 1,200? On average
last
this year?
Last year was 750.
Okay.
It's like the waiver wire. It's like the waiver wire. So you're talking on average, if you have 750 guys, you realize it's more than two guys transferring per program? There are only 352 programs. It's more than two guys a program. That's remarkable. But the Eagles have the second pick, and they'll go quarterback. But even there, you can reach. Drew Bledsoe was the first overall pick. I remember Drew Bledsoe being the first overall pick. I'm like, okay, fine. And I remember I didn't like Rick Meyer. And he got picked second. I'm like, what the heck are they picking him for? I watched him three times against Penn State. Didn't light me up any one of the three times. Thinking to myself, why the heck did they pick him? Seriously, it's the second overall pick in the draft. I'm like, what the heck are they doing here? Now, remember how tight it was, Peyton Manning to Ryan Leaf? I mean, there was really a lot of debate who you want because Leaf, the one thing he had over Manning was his mobility. And I kept watching them. I'm like, how can you can't pick Ryan Leaf over Manning. Manning's exponentially better.
And it was April 18th, 1998. That was actually the first day that we became News Radio 1070 WKOK on a Saturday. We aired the draft live that day.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Okay. We're coming up on the 20th anniversary of that in 2 years. We have a big party for that. And let's see, what are they? RG3 and Andrew Luck. I didn't mind RG3 being picked second. I thought that what the Redskins gave up for him was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Let's see, I'm trying to think, who are the other 1-2 combinations at quarterback? Like, I remember one year the Bengals took Akili Smith from Oregon. I'm looking around thinking, what the heck are you doing? Sometimes I see stuff like that and I'm thinking, you're a professional organization? That's who, after all this research, that's who you're taking? Really? And this is another one of those cases where I don't think, this is going to sound weird, but you know who I think has the greatest potential of any of the top six quarterbacks of the draft? I'm talking about just pure potential. Pure potential. It's Christian. I think Hackenberg's got the most potential of any of them. I mean, I've watched Paxton Lynch. I've watched Goff. I've watched Wentz. Wentz is pretty good. I watched Prescott, and I watched Cook. Like, I've seen Cook in person twice. Doesn't light me up. I watched Prescott on TV. Absolutely doesn't light me up. I saw Paxton Lynch finally on TV. I was like, okay. Goff? I'm like, all right. I remember we were doing the show, and it was during the Armed Forces Bowl in Fort Worth, and he threw, I don't know, five touchdown passes in the first half. But I think they're, who the heck were they playing? Navy? It's like, no, Navy played Pitt. Who'd they play? Air Force? Air Force, right? I saw Air Force on TV one time this year, and I'm like, their defense didn't exactly make me feel like it was the second coming of the Purple People Eaters. And then I saw Wentz, obviously, but he was doing it against FCS guys, so I'm not really sure. I mean, you're going to throw that out. You're going to throw an out, and that corner is not going to be an FCS corner over there. I mean, you can complain about the Steelers' corners all you want. They're still exponentially better than the corners he was facing at that level. That's the big question mark on him. You know, how does he throw the ball against guys that have legitimate closing speed and some instincts?
So Howie Roseman met with the media earlier today, this afternoon. He says, let me be clear, Sam Bradford is our starting quarterback. The Eagles will not trade Bradford. The only way to make this trade is to be comfortable with both of the quarterbacks at the top of the draft. We're very sure we're going to get the player we want. For us, we have a unique situation where we have our head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach with an extensive history with quarterbacks, and looking at future quarterback classes factored into making this trade. Says it's hard to be great without taking some risks. Well, this will be on Howie Roseman's resume if they knock this one out of the park for sure.
Right. Now let's look at the Bradford thing for a moment. I mean, saying he's our starting quarterback, did he really have to say that? It's obvious that Sam Bradford's the starting quarterback. But think about the Bradford deal. The Bradford deal was not a 5 or 6 year deal like some of the other quarterback deals we've seen. The Bradford deal was two years.
Yeah, what, 18 per?
2 years guaranteed, 26
bonuses
with incentives and bonuses. He can get to 36 over the 2 years, but 26 of it's guaranteed. But it's only a 2 year contract. To me, that is the big tip-off in all of this, that it was only a two-year deal. Now, it doesn't mean at the end of 2 years, if they don't think whomever they draft a week from tomorrow is ready, it doesn't mean they can't re-up them for 4 or 5 more years. And so that part of the equation is interesting, because in 2 years they can make a decision pro or con in Sam Bradford. And they can make part of that decision, A, on Bradford's performance, and B, on whether the guy they pick in 8 days is ready. If they think in a couple of years, the guy they pick 8 days from today is ready, they can cut Bradford loose and then use that money to give that new quarterback the second contract. If they look at it and they're just not quite sure, they can re-up Bradford. So it does give them some options as to how to handle the quarterback situation. So they bought themselves a little insurance there. Remember, Aaron Rodgers had to hang for 4 years behind Brett Favre. And then we've watched Aaron Rodgers be brilliant ever since. Now, maybe the guy they draft, like, they have to have confidence in two guys Sean, they have to have total confidence in two guys. And the reason why it has to be total confidence in two guys is that they don't know which one of the two the Rams is taking. The Rams could take Goff. That means they're happy with Wentz. The Rams could take Wentz, and that means that the Eagles were equally happy with Goff. So they have to be happy with one or the other. But again, if you're telling me the guy I think that has the greatest upside out of all this, the greatest upside of any quarterback in this draft, that I think that will be able to handle it day in and day out, and you know, not next year. There's no way, really, playing next year is out of the question for him. But I think 10 years from now, if he stays healthy, Christian Hackenberg is going to be the best quarterback in this draft. He's rated sixth right now. He can make all the throws. I mean, he can make all the throws. There are days in practice, Sean, where I was dazzled by what he did. I remember a practice right before. In fact, I even mentioned it on the show for the San Diego State game. I said, you should have seen Thursday's practice. It was just jaw-dropping. And he had several like that. As you look around, bang, 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 like, holy mackerel, look how accurate he is. Right? So he can make all the throws. And pre-snap, he's brilliant. He blew John Gruden away with pre-snap. Did you watch the Gruden camp thing at all?
DVR'd it. I saw it. It popped up last night. I'm definitely going to watch it tonight.
I mean, except for the parts I'm on and ruined it, it's actually pretty good. 800-795-9565. We want to jump in with somebody here. But I think in terms of the upside, okay, arm strength, the ability to throw that 20-yard out from the hash mark, right, thread a ball, he can do all that. When his footwork is right, his accuracy, the accuracy part is going to be the biggest part in this that he has to solve. And that comes down to footwork. Dick and Milton. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Steve, I just wanted to tell you, because you said something that kind of amused me about the Rams fans on the draft, how they'd be happy. The real Rams fans are not going to be happy because they're still in St. Louis. And the fans in Los Angeles weren't even Rams fans last year. Well, most of
no,
the people
they
weren't
that.
Rams fans.
In fact, those Rams fans haven't been Rams fans since 1994.
When you said that, it just kind of amused me because the real Rams fans aren't going to be happy anyhow because they don't really have a football team in St. Louis.
That's true. That's absolutely right.
I told somebody that today. I just can't in my mind envision St. Louis without a football team. I'm sorry. There's places that don't even deserve a football team if they don't have one.
Yeah,
I mean, Jacksonville gets nobody at their games. Why would you have a team in Jacksonville and not in St. Louis? I guess that's my point. It's just as stupid to me. They're ruining sports in a sense.
I'm completely with you.
It amused me when you said that because I was thinking how the real Rams fans aren't going to be happy at all because they don't even have a football team. Those people weren't even Rams fans. They're Dodger fans and whoever, Angel fans.
you're going along and you're making statements. Yeah, which are some of them are a little generalized, and all of a sudden you realize exactly what you said. You're right. The Rams fans were in St. Louis. They're like, the heck with them.
that's probably what's going to happen. The other thing that kind of irritated me this year, it's the first time I maybe ever that there's not a team from Canada in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just mind-boggling
to
me.
No. It is, but that's on. Yeah, it's on them to get there. They're going to try and I think they're going to expand. But you have to expand by two. And Quebec City is one of the places they're looking to expand into, or the door is open to, as last week we had on the show, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. And Tony said he has a good friend that was in the Islanders meeting, and they were talking about moving the Islanders up to Quebec. But
yeah, I think,
for whatever...
I think I told you this.
For whatever,
go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, Dick, please.
I think I told you this before. I don't think you should have a National Hockey League team in any city where you can't make ice outside. I've always felt that way. That's me. That's always been my thinking on hockey.
Yes. Yeah. But what if Al Gore is right and then suddenly in Canada you can't? No.
Well, that might be, but that's not going to be in my lifetime.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks, Dick. All right, we'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Dick says they shouldn't play hockey if they can't make ice. He has a point. Everyone knows how disappointed I was when my hometown team, the Hartford Whalers, moved. And I can tell you, growing up in Connecticut, they can absolutely make ice.
Those t-shirts and jerseys still are awesome.
In fact, number six, the Whalers are still number six in merchandise in the NHL, and they moved 20 years ago to Carolina. They sell more Hartford Whalers jerseys than they do Carolina Hurricanes jerseys. Gary Bettman would not put a team in Hartford if he were held a hostage. Las Vegas, Quebec City are the two prime spaces for expansion coming up. Las Vegas can't make ice. Quebec City can. To take Dick's point and continue to run with it. We're going to talk with Steve Samsel tomorrow about the Big Ten television deal.